The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello there. This is Fred Brack from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. And for the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Our State magazine. Today's reading of Our State is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached by calling 919-781-1973. And now it's time to return to the April 2019 edition of Our State magazine, celebrating North Carolina. We're going to be reading toward the end some more of the festival portion of the theme this month. This one is entitled Songsmith Gathering in Brevard, Songs to Live By. In Brevard, a gathering devoted to singers-songwriters and their fans keeps a mother's wisdom and wishes alive. Some parents push their children toward relationships in the hope that those relationships will result in marriage or job offers, but not Cindy Platt. Her reasons for encouraging her three children to forge new relationships were altruistic. It was at her urging that her youngest child, Woody, the lead singer of the Grammy Award-winning bluegrass band Steep Canyon Rangers, reached out to John Felty, a musician and concert producer in the Platts' hometown of Brevard. Woody's mom was the instigator in us joining forces, John says. Woody called me up and said, "My mom thinks that you and I should create a bluegrass festival and make it a fundraiser for the Boys and Girls Club." Woody and John wasted no time creating the Mountain Song Festival, a three-day celebration of bluegrass that features marquee musicians like Robert Earl Keen, Shannon Whitworth, Tam O'Brien, and Sam Bush, and bands like the Taj Mahal Trio in Brevard each fall. The Steep Canyon Rangers are the host band. 14 years later, the Mountain Song Festival has raised nearly $1 million for the Boys and Girls Club of Transylvania County. Further proof, as if any of us need it, that mothers know best. Woody and John, co-founders of Mountain Song Productions, figured that if they could have that much fun and raise that much money with one music festival, they ought to try two. John had experimented with a smaller version of a songwriter-focused festival years earlier. The timing seemed right to launch it for a bigger audience. So on a crisp afternoon each April, the Songsmith Gathering springs to life at the Brevard Music Center. From the amphitheater stage, where Yo-Yo Ma, Joshua Bell, and countless classical luminaries have performed, comes music native to these forested hills and hollers, ballads, songs of broken hearts, and timeless woes and simple truths. The opening act is a Brevard local, Clint Roberts, whose music is heavy on electric guitar and harmonica, with lyrics that remind one of old country crooners like George Jones or Glenn Campbell. If these crooners had grown up listening to Pearl Jam. "Honey, I've been thinking, as you know, I want to do," Clint sings out. "Maybe this here ain't the time or place for the likes of me and you." These are songs with tales to tell. With each one, a new story begins. While the Mountain Song Festival leans heavily on bluegrass, Songsmith highlights Americana music and songwriting. "A great song transcends genre," John says. And there will be plenty of great songs performed today. The lawns around Whittington Fall Auditorium are scattered with blankets and folding chairs that will stay occupied long after the blue sky turns dark. Folks who have come to hear singers and musicians who are also accomplished songwriters, they've written songs covered by artists like Brad Paisley, the Dixie Chicks, Bonnie Raitt, and Bon Iver. They've had their music performed by Willie Nelson and Carlos Santana. But here they perform it in their own voice, their own way. When the food trucks rolled in, Brevard's Roland's Smoke Barbecue and others, the smells of springtime mingle with smoke. Texas troubadour Beth Wood takes the stage, acoustic guitar in hand, and sings, "It's an interstate world. I'm a backroads girl." Surrounded by woods, her words match this place. Tucking in plates of ribs and brisket, Walter and Carol Wilson, a retired couple originally from Georgia, explain that they heard about this gathering through the Mountain Song Festival. When we found out that Woody Platt has a role in Songsmith, we said, "Well, I guess we need to go to that too," Walter says. He nods toward the main stage and lifts another forkful of brisket. "I'm glad we did." Another more intimate stage has been set up by a small lake on the property. Mia Rose Lynn, a Nashville transplant by way of California, is picking her guitar and singing, "I Stared You Down," begging, "Baby, read my mind." Her gorgeous voice rolls across the lake as if carried by the breeze. Children run past, barefoot, dodging the crowds in front of the stage. Back here on the lake, it seems as though Mia Rose is the only musician for miles around. Cindy Platt's husband, Al, and their oldest child, Parker, have planted themselves by the lake, too. Cindy, who passed away suddenly in 2013, would surely have been proud of what Woody and John have created, not once but twice, to benefit her favorite organization, the Boys and Girls Club, whose local chapter was renamed in her honor a few years ago. "It's something that she deserved," Al says, "but it's not something she would have advocated for on her own behalf." Al would know. The two were high school sweethearts in Atlanta and were married for more than four decades. They raised three children together and saw each other through the building of careers and communities. Al opened Platt Architecture in Brevard 35 years ago, and Parker works alongside him. While Al designed structures, Cindy designed community projects. She founded and worked with charities that served children in the area. She served two terms on the city council and spent 4 years as mayor pro tem. In 2000, she worked to open the Boys and Girls Club of Transylvania County, and in 2005, she received the Boys and Girls Club of America National Medallion. She had an infinite amount of patience and a will to make things happen, Al said. She was one of those fearless women who just wouldn't take no for an answer. Parker laughs. "Like when she came to me and said, 'We need some young people involved in the Boys and Girls Club, so you need to join the board.'" Nothing seemed too daunting for his mom, he says. She'd say, "If we fail, so what? At least we tried." You can learn a lot from a woman like that, Al says. After Cindy's death, a memorial event was held at Brevard College to honor her life. The theater seats 700 people. It was standing room only. As the sun starts to drop behind the hills, the festival crowd settles in for the evening shows. John watches from the wings of the amphitheater as Sarah Siskind takes the stage. She's been here a few days already. The Thursday and Friday before the crowds arrive and the shows start, Songsmith hosts a songwriting school, offering classes with titles such as Extreme Noticing, Beating Writer's Block, and Inspired by Life. The classes, which are open to songwriters of all levels, are taught by Sarah and Beth Wood. Both of them, John says, have a great gift for helping people get out of them what is inside of them and put it in song. Sarah has written songs for some of the best-known recording artists in the country. Her own music has appeared on the television shows Nashville, Pretty Little Liars, and The Wire, among others. In this business, John says, it takes that kind of drive and her kind of fearlessness to succeed. That lesson seems to fan out into the night. It's found in Cindy's legacy of working hard for the local children who need help the most, and in the performers, and the aspiring songwriters, too, who come to soak up their words. Dusk creeps around the edges of the amphitheater, and the stage lights form a perfect halo above where Sarah stands behind the microphone, her guitar in hand. Everyone, John included, is lost in her voice, her song. You can learn a lot from a woman like that. Songsmith Gathering will be held on May 18th at 349 Andante Lane in Brevard. Learn more at songsmithgathering.com. And Wiley Cash was the author of that article. You are listening to Our State Magazine on the Triangle Radio Reading Service. If you have any comments on our program, please call the studios, 919-832-5138. And now let's go fishing. The Shad Festival in Grifton, a fish worth fighting for. In the creeks and rivers of the coastal plain, shad are harbingers of spring. For the folks in one tiny town, their annual Shad Festival also heralds a renewed spirit of resistance. Excuse me, of resilience. And this is written by Jeremy Markovich, a very frequent contributor to Our State Magazine. As a picture of a young man holding up a fish a good foot long here, and he's looking at us with a big smile, as a picture of a river and a dock, and it says Contania Creek. A tributary of the Neuse River is a prime spot for catching shad. The Grifton Shad Festival is a prime spot for throwing the fish. Andrew Park, 15, set a new record for tossing a shad 125 feet. By the time Hurricane Matthew hit, the shad were long gone, back out to sea. But the water they return to every year in Lake Winter near Grifton was no longer calm and meandering. Contania Creek was far out of its banks, only 4 feet below the high water mark set by Hurricane Floyd. The water on downtown Queen Street was 6 inches deep. The grocery store was flooded. 14 inches of water stood in the Highway 55 burger joint. Neither would reopen for months, at least. Matthew, in 2016, was like Floyd in 1999, which was like Fran in 1996. After the earlier hurricanes, hundreds of people in tiny Grifton had no homes to return to, and population numbers show that nearly one out of every 7 people in town left for good. 10 years after Floyd, a massive flood hit, which led to the redrawing of the town's 100-year flood maps. Another 18 people left when they realized that their homes sat on land that could no longer be built upon. The low-lying areas became campgrounds, walking trails, and parks, one of which bears the words "Rebirth" from the flood of 1999 on its entrance sign. The shock from the change in landscape gradually wore off, and by then the town had been remade by the local economy as well. In the early 2000s, DuPont effectively closed a textile plant on North Carolina Highway 11 that had provided thousands of steady jobs since the 1950s. And so Grifton, with its modest homes, leafy streets, and steepled churches, all was a sleepy little town on the road between Kinston and Greenville, got a little sleepier. Then came Matthew. "I think Grifton has been kicked as hard as a town can be kicked," says Rick Gaddy, who grew up here. But we don't give up. The dignitaries, area mayors, insurance commissioners, clerks, and superintendents, sit on folding chairs in the back of a flatbed truck. Before the Grifton Shad Festival parade officially starts, a few people come up to the podium to speak. "If you've never been here before, welcome, visitor," says Mayor Billy Ray Jackson, who, with his fedora, short tie, and sunglasses, looks straight out of a 1960s government handbook. "If you've been here more than three times, you're home." A woman on the other side of Queen Street can't help but mention that the man at the podium is her son. Addie Jackson Harper, now 80, has since moved to Burlington, some 2 hours away. "I see people I started first grade with," she says, looking around. Her daughter, Lori Jackson Barber, is here from Leesburg, Virginia. Lori's sons are here, too. One is a wrestler, and the other happens to have a part in his high school production of The Little Mermaid. Both are missing practices. "We had to," Lori says. "They do not miss a festival." Addie grew up here, got married, widowed, and remarried here. That wedding was in 1999, months after Hurricane Floyd brought 6 to 8 inches of rain and 100-mile-per-hour winds. "The flies were really bad," Lori remembers. Billy Ray's yard flooded to his back porch, but the town stayed. "Every time they say, 'We won't be pushed out,' it's a town of survival," she says, "and no matter how bad it gets, the Shad Festival goes on." Then, in a quiet moment, before the 2nd Marine Division Band and its brassy anthem arrive on the parade route, Lori leans in. "I don't like shad," she whispers. One legend says that a porcupine ran into the water, got turned inside out, and became a shad. It's not an easy fish to eat. It's astonishingly bony. The preferred way to cook shad is to fry it, adding vinegar to the oil just before adding the fish to crystallize many of the bones. But there are just too many bones. In any event, it's hard to find a shad to eat here. The high school football team has joined up with a local Lions club to cook batches of fish stew in large iron pots. The recipe, some 47 years old now, calls for bacon, potatoes, tomato sauce, onions, and a dozen eggs. "You let it sit," insists Tomha McMillan, a beefy assistant coach. "You don't stir it." The peppery smell wafting out from the town park pavilion leads to the longest food line at the festival. But the stew contains catfish, not shad. The only shad at the festival this year are for throwing. People, mostly men, line up, pay a dollar, pick up a frozen shad, are told not to step past a pair of yellow cones, and then heave a shad as far as they can into a patch of grass next to the railroad tracks. At this point, 122 feet is the best throw. His secret was he folded the fish in half, says a man holding a clipboard. Shad shows up on official "Eat Mo Shad" t-shirts, which 1 in 10 people here seem to be wearing. A shad logo appears on banners hung on poles, on a sign atop a police department, painted on a shad, cut into a metal fence. Yellow paper shad are taped to the storefront windows, but the real live shad are mostly gone from Contentnea Creek by the time the festival begins around the third weekend in April. They're everywhere and nowhere at the same time. The fish spend most of their lives in the Atlantic Ocean, but early in the year, every year, they find their way into rivers along the eastern seaboard, going farther and farther up creeks and streams to the places where they hatched. Grifton, a prime shad spawning, and hence fishing, spot, is some 50 miles upstream from where the Neuse River widens out into Pamlico Sound past New Bern. After they spawn, the shad head back out into the ocean. Tommy Sugg, one of the folks in charge of the festival this year, says there might be a few left in the creek at this point. Usually, he says, when the dogwoods bloom, they're gone. Then again, the Shad Festival isn't really about the shad anyway. Tommy, who looks like a skinny Kenny Rogers, flits around the festival like a paper in the wind, according to one of his associates. He stops long enough to recount one story about the festival, which, at nearly 50 years old, is one of the oldest festivals in North Carolina. In the late 1970s, Tommy went to a Waylon Jennings concert where the Hell's Angel Motorcycle Club was providing security. They got to talking, and Tommy mentioned the Shad Festival offhand. He didn't think anything of it. At the next festival, Tommy heard the faraway rumble of Harleys. 30 of them came riding in a formation, he says, a sly look on his face. They showed up well-behaved. Still, the festival began to wither. One year, just 4,000 people came. It wasn't until 2014 or so when it really started to come back to life. Tommy says, why? The organizers put in a lot of hard work. They meet at least once a month all year to get ready. Now about 25,000 people come to town for the festival, making Grifton's population swell, at least for one long weekend, to 10 times its normal size. A lot of the young folks, when they leave the town for college, for work, or to start a family, will only come back to Grifton twice a year, on Christmas and in April for the Shad Festival. For the folks who live here, Yvette Thorbs says, this is the biggest thing in Grifton ever. Wearing a balloon monkey and a balloon palm tree on her head, Yvette stands amid carnival rides and seven of her grandchildren. They've spent a lot of money on tickets. Whenever the children do something good at school, they get a little pocket change. Over the year, they've saved their money and pooled it to come up with about $150. Most of that goes toward riding the rides. Then Yvette talks about the storm. Matthew tried to get us, she says. On the Lenoir County side of the creek where she and her family live, 13 relatives on the same road lost everything with Floyd, but they stayed in Grifton. Floyd and Fran hit Grifton's black community the hardest. By one town commissioner's estimation, about 80% of the African Americans here were displaced. But for some of those families, an unforeseen silver lining emerged. When older white people started moving out of their houses, black families who'd been looking for a place to live moved in. The town, white and black, once had neighborhoods divided along racial lines. Today, Yvette says the only visible split seems to happen during the Saturday night street dance. The white folks head up to the depot for the rock and beach music while the black folks walk down to Matty's Mini Park for gospel. The festival itself is a mix, too. A car show, a BMX bike demonstration, funnel cakes, face painting, black families, white couples, Latino kids, old folks under sun umbrellas, children scurrying after candy thrown from parade floats. When the festival is over, people head home. Many leave town, but every year some of them return. When Piggly Wiggly pulled out of Grifton after Matthew, town leaders lured a new grocery chain called Tropicana. A soon-to-be-finished bypass will make Greenville's hospital and its jobs a shorter commute to Grifton than some parts of Greenville itself. And after the loss of people and industry, the town annexed a brand-new solar farm, the second largest in North Carolina. It sits on the fringe, generating electricity on nearly three-quarters of an acre, or three-quarters of a square mile, rather, of farmland. The solar panels brought in hundreds of construction workers and a financial shot in the arm. The struggles and solutions are out of sight during the festival, which runs on a shoestring and yet winds up being the thing that binds everyone together. Tommy, in the shade of a tent, watches people starting to set up for the first musical act of the afternoon. From here, you can see a steady stream of people walking down Queen Street, stopping in front of the railroad depot, saying hello and recognizing each other. For some people, it's been a few days. For others, years. People come back home, he says. Just like the Shad, they come back. The Grifton Shad Festival is over at this point. It was April 10th to 14th. In Grifton. If you want to check on what it is like and what it might be for next year, head over to griftonshadfestival.com. We have just a couple of minutes left. The next article has some short little blurbs in it, so I think we'll try a few of those. Season of celebration. Communities across the state welcome warm weather with festivals that are a little quirky, a lot of fun, and a holy North Carolina. Written by Kaya Findlay. Snack Stop, North Carolina Pickle Festival in Mount Olive. April 13th, again, sorry, it's gone. As home to the number one pickle producer in the country, it's only natural that Mount Olive hosts the annual North Carolina Pickle Festival. Now in its 33rd year, the festival attracts nearly 40,000 people and covers most of downtown with pickle-related activities. There's the Pickle Packing Production Challenge, where contestants pack pickles into jars as fast as they can. There's the Pickle Derby, where kids race pickles, affixed with rubber bands to miniature race cars. And, of course, there are the free Mount Olive pickles and a variety of pickle-flavored treats, pickle ice cream, pickle pizza, pickle snow cones, and new this year, pickle cotton candy. ncpicklefest.org. April 26th to 28th, the Fayetteville Dogwood Festival. In 1962, the beautiful dogwoods that line the streets of Fayetteville inspired the then mayor to proclaim this place the City of Dogwoods, and soon after established the Fayetteville Dogwood Festival. The celebration takes place when the trees burst into bloom each spring, drawing 275,000 people. The three-day festival offers free music, ranging from R&B to country to rock. Food includes classic fair snacks like funnel cakes and turkey legs, and unique treats like cheesecake on a stick. Local vendors show off their wares at the street fair on Saturday and Sunday, sharing the space with acrobatic performers and dance groups. FayDogwoodFestival.com. And finally, Pirate Fest in Greenville, April 12th and 13th. Again, it's past. You might like Blackbeard, you might spot Blackbeard walking down the street or see a sword fight happening before your very eyes if you visited Greenville during the annual Pirate Fest in April. For 2 days, 100 pirates take over the city's town common to reenact life, what life might have been like for many pirates, including Blackbeard, who landed on North Carolina's shores in the 1700s. Visitors can watch pirates fire cannons over the Tar River or pursue the Captain's Market, which offers pirate necessities like replica muskets and hand-stitched hats. Music, food, art, and carnival, plus plenty of pirates and their antics, keep the fun afloat all weekend long. PirateFestNC.com. Well, my friends, that's about all the time we have for today's episode of Our State Magazine. I certainly hope you enjoyed it and that you'll be sure to listen next time. I'm Fred Brack, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State was underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast on our website, TriangleReadingService.org. If you have any comments or any questions, please call the studios, 919-832-5138. So long, until next time.